following is a special presentation of the Buccaneers Sports Network. This is the Jay and Keith Show. Two broadcasters, two microphones, and one meticulously scripted podcast.
You what?
Just kidding. Get it, J-K? You get it.
That's what I thought was so funny! It's not funny!
Alongside Keith Brake, here's the voice of the Bucs, Jay Sandoz.
Alright, it is a Monday after the Saturday in which ETSU football went out and took care of business, and they did so early.
Yeah.
Got a couple scores on the board, a 17-0 lead. They would win by 20. And answer the question, how would they respond to the loss at North Dakota State? Jay Sanders, Keith Brake with you, and it is resounding they were ready to play.
They were ready to go.
Other question mark, I think, that was answered was, can Jalen King get the deep ball, connect on a few? And I think he answered that as well.
Yes. In the immortal words of Republica, baby, I'm ready to go. That was ETSU's mindset as they got out there and scored on the opening drive, hit some big plays, defense gets some sudden change. You punch one out, and Jalen Woods falls on it, and ETSU is on it 14-0. That's what good teams do. Like, that's the thing that stands out to me. Is we welcome you into the Jay and Keith Show, which is presented by our good friends at First Horizon. I watched so many good football teams over the last decade in FCS. And when you want to beat a team and beat them decisively and beat them early, there is a way that you do that. You execute your game script, you get a takeaway in plus territory, and you capitalize on sudden change. And if you do that, boom, 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 you win a lot of games. I saw North Dakota State beat Delaware that way twice because they were able to capitalize on sudden change, create a turnover, get a short field, cash in on that after scoring on your opening possession, and you're good. You're good at that point. So ETSU did just that, and 14-0, 17-0 at the end of the first quarter. It was, as Trey Lamb put it, was 14-0 before the bus cooled down, which was a nice one. 17-0 at the end of one. And that was enough to win the football game. 34-14, ETSU goes on to the victory. Jalen King, two rushing touchdowns. His best passing performance, I thought, by far at the quarterback position for ETSU. And maybe even in his young college career against the Phoenix. As the Bucs continue to grow in a big-time way behind a big-time, I mean really high-caliber offensive line.
The depth is also impressive. You look at the wide receivers, they seem to have almost an embarrassment of riches. Then you look at the running backs, right? No Devontae Houston. They're going to bring in a kid that was brought in to play wide receiver, right? LeBourne, he gets one carry, 17 yards, touchdown. You got Bryson Irby doing the workman effort, a little banged up towards the end of the game. So, let's play a guy who got, most of the good snaps last year behind Bryson Irby and Trey Foster, and he goes out there and in the – 4-minute/6-minute offense, and just churns out 4 or 5 yards, picks up first downs, and really salts the game away.
I love Trey Foster, man. Like he's somebody that he didn't get a lot of buzz in preseason because we didn't really know how well he was going to fit into the scheme, and maybe he doesn't fit the archetype of the smaller, quicker home run hitter like a Devontae Houston does, and having that speed factor back there is a big deal in this offense. He was brought in to play a power scheme, but Bryson Irby adapted to that really well, and I think Foster is adapting to that really well, too. When you put him in a game, he has the ability to deliver in a big way. He absolutely torched VMI last year and gave ETSU a chance to win that football game against the Keydets. Now you're at the point where, okay, you need him. It's your time. Let's call him up, see what he can do. And ETSU hopefully doesn't go into the Citadel game with the running backs Cameron LeBourne and Trey Foster. But at the same time, those guys have delivered. I mean, LeBourne scored a touchdown on his first touch.
I mean, you can still go with Torrey Lambert. I mean, you still got
there's
enough.
There's depth at that position, yeah.
It is amazing to me kind of what they're able to do. And LeBourne, they were trying to figure out, and if you have not heard the press conference, which just happened about an hour ago from where we recorded, they asked Coach about LeBourne and him, kind of getting a carry. And Coach said, hey, we did timed 40s or GPS or whatever it is to see who our fastest guys are. And, you know, Devontae Houston and Hakeem Meggett and Cameron LeBourne were the three fastest things. Like, if you're a good coach, you figure out how to get those guys the ball in space. And LeBourne only moved to running back on Monday. He's a traditionally a receiver. It's what he played at Buffalo, what he played in junior college. So he's, you know, kind of learning the position. But they're certainly going to try to get him the ball in some space. And then, you know, in a week or two, you should see Devontae Houston back. So, again, more depth, maybe move LeBourne back to receiver, slot, or figure it out. But anyway, there's a lot there. And, again, you know, to me, Jalen King, the big question was, okay, we start to see his legs more, and that's a little more by design. He had the big career long run, 57 yards when the Bucs were backed up against it. But he missed his first throw. He had an opportunity, deep ball throw, I should say. Missed his first throw there, and then after that, you know, he threw it where guys could make plays or where a pass interference call should be made and wasn't made. But either way, he put the ball in play where guys could actually go get it, and you've got great receivers to go get it, whether it is Megan, whether it's A.J. Johnson. You know, I think Ephraim Floyd and Kareem Page can go get it as well. You know, I don't know that they're high-point guys, but, again, you throw it out there. And that's the thing about King. There was a couple guys in his face. And he kind of throws a little three-quarters, if you will. But a couple times in rush against Kazeem Moore, who was number seven for Elon, he was able to kind of drop and sidearm from a different slot, and guys running out routes were able to make the play. I thought he looked great.
Yeah, he did. He really did. And his chemistry with Megan, I think, has grown a lot in a short amount of time. I asked Jalen in the press conference, where's been the biggest improvement with your deep ball the last couple of weeks? And he said, just take something off. And you can see that. I mean, he was throwing – the ball was coming out, and that was a howitzer at some point. Well, not even a howitzer. That was more like a – it was like an RPG coming out of his hands sometimes. It just hot, straight, hard to catch, and he would shoot it over guys' heads. And he started underthrowing the ball just a little bit compared to what his instincts were telling him to do. And he did the Yoda, right? He must unlearn what he has learned. And he did that. And now Hakeem Meggett is a legit deep ball threat. I mean, that four iron is what I've taken to calling it, where it just kind of tails off at the end. That is a winner in this offense because of the big-bodied receivers that you can get down the field. Give them a chance to go over the top and make some great plays. It doesn't just have to be about the speed and moving the pocket and, you know, get Ephraim Floyd on like a little drag route where he can cut it up and use his speed to get upfield. You can go down the field. You can sit back in the pocket a little bit if you need to and take shot. And you can do that because of the great offensive line. And I want to – Trey hammered this point in his press conference, and I want to hammer it as well. The reason that ETSU is so good on offense – I'm hammering this point right now.
Yes, you are.
ETSU is this good on offense because of the line. King is a good quarterback. The receivers are good. The backs are good. But if you've got five turnstiles on your offensive line, none of it matters. These guys are playing their butts off. And Joe Selfo has got them motivated. They are staying humble. They are staying hungry. They are doing what needs to be done to make this offense go. This is the game at this level in FCS. If you want to win a national championship, and I can put my flag in the ground, Montana will not win a national championship this season because of their offensive line. I think they have a pretty good quarterback. I think they have good ball skill players. Their offensive line is really trying to figure stuff out right now. And it was that way last year, too. And it was a big part of the reason why they did not win the national championship, why South Dakota State smoked them in Frisco, and why North Dakota State smoked Montana State a couple years before that in Frisco, and for that matter, why South Dakota State hammered North Dakota State in Frisco and won that game because they were blowing NDSU's defensive line off the ball. It is a line of scrimmage game. If you can't win at the line, you can't win squat. And ETSU, for my money, has the best offensive line in the conference. And I think this is a top 15 unit in the country. They are extremely good and extremely consistent. Those interior guys and all the experience they bring are very valuable. And I think you've got two really good tackles in Jaquan Adams, who started every game at left tackle last year for Gardner Webb, and Darrell Bailey Jr., who kind of bounced around the FBS ranks, never really found a place he could get on the field, comes to FCS, and he is an instant success. These guys are really, really good. And ETSU's offense is going to have a chance to move the football with any degree of consistency against any team in the SoCon, because these guys will grind down defensive fronts. That's why, you know, we want ETSU to be healthy at running back. But to a point, your running backs can rotate and interchange because they're all going to have holes to run through. Jalen King is going to have time in the pocket to process and make his first read, make his second read, and then decide, all right, it's time to go. He's going to have time to do all of that because this offensive line has been, for my money, it's the best unit on the team through four games. And that's what it should be. The best unit, the best multi-personnel unit on your team should be your offensive line, and that's where ETSU is four games in.
Yeah, they've done a great job, I think, communicating. You know, there was a couple times early in the season, I think maybe, you know, if a defense run a stun, a twist, something like that, but now it seems like they've cleaned all that up. If you're going to get to the quarterback in the pass game, you're going to have to blitz and try to bring more than what they can handle. I think the other thing is just when they need to go bully ball, because you knew up, was it 17, 8 minutes to go, that ETSU was just going to line up, hand it off, and go at you.
Yeah.
And even so, go back and look at when ETSU has been in third and short and fourth and short. You know, those numbers are pretty doggone good right now because they're able to bully ball and get going. And, again, that T formation was used to perfection on another fourth down. This time we saw a new wrinkle, the old tush-push, or in this case, the old Zach West giving whiplash to Geno English, because I think Geno maybe want to get a little lower next time, because West, I think it was Lambert, both came flying in there and knocked him about 4 yards. I think his chest went 4 yards, back of his head kind of snapped back later. But he's got. I thought, again, that's another wrinkle that we had not seen before. It looked like he was going to turn around, hand off by the way he did the checks, and all of a sudden, bam, he went.
256 yards rushing.
Yeah, again, another stellar day.
Spectacular. Outstanding. I mean, that's two straight games north of 250. I don't know the last time ETSU did that. Had to have been 2021, maybe, at the most recent. But 489 yards of offense. Offense was just outstanding. Defense, I thought, was really good. Again, this is what we wanted. And, you know, I got to tell you, man, I have been talking to people around the country, and people are taking notice of ETSU football. People who really study this as a career, as a livelihood. Your Sam Herders, your Dustin Heltons, your Matt Frazees of FCS Fans Nation fame. Those guys are really paying attention. The folks in the national scene have sat up and noticed ETSU, and I think to an extent SoCon football as well. And it's nice when people watch the games. And that is not always a given. And I think you can see that by the fact that ETSU is still not ranked in the Stats Perform Top 25. That there are some people who just do not watch the games. They see Mercer. Mercer's, what, 4-0? Or are they 4-0 now?
They are.
4-0. And everybody defers to them because they're 4-0. Not because they've watched the games and they've seen, oh, this defensive front's pretty good. Okay, their quarterback's better than I thought he might be. They got a really good running back in McGee. They can move the ball. They can do a lot of different things. They can win a lot of different games different ways. They're not watching the games. They just say, oh, they're 4-0, and they're a SoCon team, and that league's usually okay, so I'll stick them at 12. And they're not actually assessing the teams. They're just throwing darts. And I watch the games, and you watch the games, and I put a ballot together every week for Redshirt Sports, as do you, and every time I get to the end, I feel terrible. It's like, this is an awful ballot. I hate this. This is hideous. What am I doing? Because I'm watching these teams, and I'm having a tough time separating them in an order that I think is actually based on their merits of body of work and what they're doing on the field, what they actually look like from a personnel standpoint. And so you're seeing a lot of people that just haven't paid attention to the SoCon that have a national platform. Meanwhile, over in our neck of the woods, because we both vote in that Redshirt Sports poll, ETSU is number 19, whereas the Stats Perform is number 27. We're still behind Chattanooga. Chattanooga hasn't won a game. Chattanooga scored three points in their home opener. I refuse. Listen, I know the coaches poll is bad. The coaches poll's never been credible. The NCAA foisted that on all of us. It is not a credible metric. But the selection committee, until relatively recently, has been using that. It was, until recently, the only poll they were allowed to use to determine at-large bids to the FCS playoffs and seeding. That's awful. It's been awful for years. And I refuse to accept this slurry of ignorance that we have foisted upon us because these polls are the legacy polls, right? There are clearly people in here who are not watching the games, who are not paying attention to these teams, who do not think that it matters nearly to the degree that it actually matters to the teams on the ground and to the people on the ground. It makes it harder to do my job because some guy out there from some other part of the country, and I won't say where, I don't know where for sure, but somebody out there doesn't watch SoCon football. You know, like all of the 8 subscribers to Flow Sports are stats perform voters, because there are a ton of CAA teams in there. They just seem to get the benefit of the doubt, where the SoCon teams don't. And then when you don't watch the games, you don't realize that the SoCon has 3 teams that can compete in the CAA right now, maybe even 4. Mercer, ETSU, Wofford, and Chattanooga. And Western is kind of all over the place. They had a really great first half against Montana, and then they were awful in the second half. But this cannot, in this era of transition and upheaval in college football, this kind of nonsense cannot stand. And I cannot stand it. Maybe it's just because I came into work in a bad mood this morning, and I was ready to just have somebody, but when I saw that, it made my blood boil. Because the ignorance that it takes to think that UAlbany, a team that lost basically its entire offense, got smoked at Idaho, and whose only win this season is a 6-point, had to survive it at home against Long Island? That team is 21, and ETSU's not ranked? I ranked Chattanooga before I ranked Albany's bad. What are we doing, guys? So, yeah, reader beware when it comes to some of these polls. I do not think that that is an accurate assessment of the landscape of college football, and I'm tired of people pretending that it is.
Do I need to hit the angry man? Are we bringing angry man back? Is angry? Forget the resident angry man. I just, every Monday, you're not a Monday guy.
It flames on the side of my face.
Furious.
I just want to say, it's the second Monday in a row you've come in, and yeah, you're a little ornery on Mondays. I'm gonna find the angry man bumper, and on Mondays just hit it, and just go, I'm Jay, and just hit the bumper and let you go at it, because it is. Man, you're giving him a run for his money.
Am I wrong?
No. I'll give you these two, okay? So Columbia and Harvard have only played one game. And depending on which poll you look at, even in the Redshirt Sport, but even if you look at the poll, Harvard has played one game, which is a non-countable game, and they beat Stetson, who didn't beat Furman, beat them worse than if you want a scoreboard watch. I don't really subscribe to that, but you got that. And the Columbia beat Lafayette, who was receiving votes, right, or was in the poll, depending on what you're looking at, and they have only got one game, and they have leapfrogged a bunch of people if you look at some of the polls. So, yeah, this is a problem.
Big, stupid jellyfish.
And has been forever, right, when you talk about polls and the coaches' polls, we all know what happens. Basically, the SID walks into whatever coach and says, hey, you got to vote this week. Here's who it is. What do you want me to do? And then they'll glance at it for a second and go, I want you to put blah, 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 blah. I don't care after that. And then the SIDs go and kind of have to do the ballot. And that's many times it's been done. And many times you'll hear a coach say something about a ballot, and then that's when the AP will release the coach's ballot. Because they say if you say anything factually incorrect on your ballot, they will release your ballot. If you don't reference your ballot or lie about who you voted for. I think it was Lane Kiffin a few years ago that said, oh, yeah, I voted this team. you know, number one and this team that. And he said, no, actually the team you're playing, last week you voted number one. Everybody else had them at six or seven. So let's try not to lie about where you're putting people, right? So that happens. And there are coaches that, let's face it, if you look at a coaches poll, that will overdo their league if need be, right? Oh, our league. Oh, we'll put them there. That league, you know, we need them there. Or if they're going to play, like, for an example, if you had a big non-conference game like LSU, UCLA, right? Let's say both of those coaches, if they vote, and I don't know if they do or don't, but they both can say, well, we're about to play a big game here. Well, let's elevate this win by putting them number three or four so that nobody knows that we didn't put them number one. They didn't get the vote, but then you get – so all that happens in the coaches' stuff, right? So it's always been a little laughable, although it should seem like the best poll would be the coaches' poll. But the truth is, how many hours a day are they watching their team and the team they just played and the team they're about to play?
If every coach were Trey Lamb, I would trust the coaches' poll. Because I know, I have Trey Lamb on the record saying that he goes home and watches more football and sketches down concepts that he likes and tries to add them into his offense. And has had success with that. Like, I think that's great. If every coach did that, if every coach was just hopelessly obsessed with the sport and wanted to vote, hey, that's great. Awesome. But coaches are not that way. Like you're talking about, coaches are trying to game plan.
So, and that's a great example. I remember Randy Sanders watched the end of a South Carolina overtime game. They ran a play in overtime. It was a two-point play, won the game. Very next week we play at Furman 2021. Guess what? Same play. Ran that. Malik Murray back of the end zone, same spot, and ended up getting it. So,
but
I think coaches
watches all these teams. Right. And he'll come into your office and talk to us about other teams. Like, he's paying attention to the landscape of college football, and that's because he's devoting what little free time he has to the sport. Like, a lot of coaches don't do that. They go do other things, and that's okay. Like, I'm not sitting here saying you shouldn't live your life. You should be obsessed with football. You should throw yourself into it until you absolutely can't stand the sight of a prolate spheroid. But, like, you got to know what's going on. And I feel like a lot of coaches are so engrossed in what they're doing, in trying to win games, in trying to prepare their teams to go be successful on Saturday, that doing all of that just feels excessive or extraneous. It's superfluous to them. And so I don't think they take that as, oh man, I gotta go home and watch, I gotta pull up 5 ESPN Plus broadcasts over the next 2 hours and watch at least some of these games and see how these teams are. They don't do it the way that a lot of national people do it, where we sit at home and watch these games and study these teams and try to decide who the best team is. You're right, the coaches poll, because the coaches know ball from a schematic standpoint and a development standpoint better than we do. But they also don't watch all of the teams that we watch. So it should be a better poll. Like, it should be the most reliable one. And yet, for years, it's been the least reliable one. And now it's, I mean, I didn't even point out that we're also unranked in the coaches poll, and Eastern Illinois is ahead of us after they got smoked by Illinois State.
He's having a good day. He's Keith Break, those who check in.
Yes. That's me.
Admiral has the con.
I'm running the show now. I'm sitting over here. I'm just a walking.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
That's just me. All day. All day.
That's what's a brief.
This run, I mean, obviously the quarterback situation has been really, really tough.
They thought Colin Shannon was going to be the guy. He went with Chandler Wilson and Brady Hammonds, who's a Gatlinburg-Pittman product. I mean, they're just trying to find the right combination, but right now they are not finding any combination as Norfolk State.
Well, you want to know how bad things are, and it's not just the offense. Six of their seven leading tacklers are defensive backs. That's not a great sign. Usually you want you want four or five linebackers, a D-end in there, but the corners and safeties are having to make all the tackles right now.
It's not great, Bob. It is not. Again, still a team that if they find a quarterback can figure it out, because Hunter – right now when you just can – load up against Hunter Rice and make them about as one-dimensional as you can. It's tough. I don't care what how good they are. And we both love Hunter Rice. We talk at nauseam about watching him run. Just the effort he gives, just makes a lot of something out of nothing. But I think until they get the quarterback situation, it's going to be – and for every team, right? We saw that last year at ETSU. I mean, again, this isn't that hard.
We saw it at Citadel, too. Mark Hutzel and I looked at each other and said, you know, if they can get a couple players on offense, the scheme could be pretty tricky. And I think we were right because they're 500 after four games, which they should have been 3-1. But
and if you want to just – because that's all I need to say about me.
Oh, Wofford. Wofford, too. Wofford's got Amari Odom. And Amari Odom's not a finished product yet. Like, he still makes some throws that make you go, ooh, what are you doing there, kid? But at the same time, he does things that quarterbacks the last few years at Wofford have not even been able to dream of doing.
Well, speaking of things they've not been able to do the last several years, Jonathan Bennett was 19 of 40 for 336. I know they ran a trick play and 0 for 1.
He completed 19 passes for 336 yards?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
And that's the thing. I asked Trey about, you know, what is it that makes Citadel so tough to put away. And he talked about that, you know, just their scrappy nature and their relentless work ethic, and I think those are all good things. But with Bennett at quarterback, they have an ability to work in negative game script where they're trailing and they need to throw the ball to try to get back in the ball game. They are able to do that in a way that Citadel teams of yesteryear were not able to do. This is not a team that if you can score, 35 points – and you stay fitted up and play good one-on-one football on defense, that you can blow them out. It's just not that kind of team. It's not that kind of team anymore. It's not your dad's Citadel team. And this group is going to be thorny to deal with. They are a challenge to deal with. Do I think they are the most talented team in the SoCon? No. Do I think they are a top five team in terms of talent in the SoCon? No. But every single game they've been in was a one-score game going into the fourth quarter.
Can they give you fits? That's a better question.
Yes. They gave Mercer a lot of trouble on Saturday. Mercer won it because I think Mercer's the better team, but Citadel really pushed them and made them work for it.
I think the upper 3-4 teams last couple years – could look at the bottom 3-4 teams and go win. And now, other than maybe VMI, just because, and again, VMI can try to figure it out, get a quarterback in there, that can turn some things around. They can be pesky. They certainly were last year. But now you're looking at, okay, ETSU was pretty much a win last year. Wofford was a win last year. Citadel was certainly a win. They didn't win a game last year. So
right.
VMI, they're tough. And, yeah, they can knock a few off, but they
VMI
were tough.
VMI knocked
right?
Western Carolina out of the playoffs.
Right, so up. Now, all of a sudden, you're looking at, okay, maybe VMI, and then after that, like, the bottom of the league, and I'm not saying they're world beaters, but the bottom of the league has certainly improved, and every game is, I don't think you can have an easy out. I think last year, I think Furman and a few others probably had some games that, honestly, they probably went vanilla in a lot of categories and didn't game plan as much as they needed to against some teams. They knew they could just get away with some base stuff and walk in there and win. I don't know that the league is set up that way because, again, Wofford certainly found a quarterback much improved. Jonathan Bennett played a lot of snaps at Liberty. You know, 2022 threw for almost 1,600 yards at Liberty. So he's seen some quality action. He just threw for 336. DJ Smith's a guy with a new offensive Mercer. Nobody really knew what they were doing, but the key for all three of those teams, and then not to mention, you know, Colgan's awesome, West Carolina, all that, right? It's a quarterback play. You know, Chet, we'll see. They're 0-3, but, you know, if they win against Portland State, then they're going to come in here to, you know, obviously William B. Green Jr. for homecoming on October 5th. I mean, that game,
and if
they don't
beat,
get rock and roll.
Well, if they don't beat Portland State and they're 0-4, it's 5-0 on fire.
A lot of trouble.
There's a lot of trouble in Scenic City if that's what happens. Yeah, Citadel really should be 3-1. They should have beaten South Carolina State, man. They should have beat SCSU, and they didn't. You've got VMI's on the bye. Western's on the bye coming back from Montana. Great first half, and then Cole Gonzalez made some weird decisions, took some sacks. I think he was like 6 of 15 for 81 yards, touchdown and a pick in the second half, and then took two sacks for 17 or 20 yards. It was not his finest half hour of football. But Western came out and played really well, and then second half, Montana figured it out.
But also, he had a shoulder injury, and that was a non-throwing shoulder injury, so he got late hit. It was flagged, appropriately so. He got elevated after a throw, slammed to the ground. The guy landed on him. It was his left shoulder, not his throwing shoulder. He stayed in that series, missed, I think, a few plays there towards the end of the first half, and then came back second half. But there's no doubt that left shoulder was hanging and was not a good – like, I think he – honestly – I think he tried to gut it out in the second half, and I don't know if that fully affected
it. I don't know
it.
that's a good idea. Generally, that's not a good idea. I mean, especially, like, at some point, you know, if your guy's hurt, get him out. But that game doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. You want to beat Montana, okay, cool. I mean, that's a great win. It's a great feather in your cap. But if he goes out there and something worse happens and now he has to miss weeks, plural – you're talking about not having your starting quarterback for Wofford, a team that's looked decent. You're talking about not having your starting quarterback for the Citadel or Furman or Mercer or Chattanooga. I mean, you run a lot of risk there. I think at some point you just got to make the calls like, listen, I appreciate your toughness. I don't think less of you for not trying to tough this out, but we're trying to win a conference championship. Our way into the playoffs is a conference championship. I think that's the way forward for Western Carolina, certainly now that they're 1-3, I think the way forward for the Cats is you've got to win the SoCon. That was probably true before they beat Montana, or before they played Montana. They didn't beat Montana. Before they played Montana, I just wouldn't risk it at that point.
The other game I want to just touch on, William and Mary and Furman. Furman, some turnovers again, but here's the kicker. 384 yards rushing for William and Mary. Last year, including all the playoff games, right, played 15
yep.
games, right, they gave up 6 100 or more yards rushing and only, oh, no, none. I think it was 200 maybe the last game, maybe Montana had 200, but only maybe one 200-yard game rushing. So far this year, 4 for 4 over 100, 286 yards and 384. And if you want to say Ole Miss, fine. But, I mean, they played South Carolina last year, and I'm including that number, too.
Yeah. And so there were 200-yard rushers in the Bill and Mary game.
Yeah. I mean, that, to me, and I knew they lost a lot, but the O-line and D-line for Chatt and Furman are the biggest things, going back to Keith's original rant earlier about we watched the games. That's the biggest thing.
I think Chattanooga's D-line is okay. Like, their offensive line has not looked in sync the way that they need to. Certainly they didn't against Furman. I think their defensive line is going to be fine. You know, I think that's going to be a challenge for ETSU. I think it's going to be a great measuring stick for the Bucks in 2 weeks. Now, obviously, they got to get through the Citadel first, right? But I think in 2 weeks, we can afford, you and I can afford to look ahead. The players in the locker room can't. I think that's going to be a really good test for ETSU. I think it's a good unit. I think Furman lost a lot on the defensive line.
Their
linebackers are still okay. But if you're getting knocked 2 yards, 3 yards off the ball every single snap, that doesn't help you much. I mean, your linebackers are basically getting smushed into the first level of defense anyway.
They're giving up a lot of yards. I mean, to me, that's the concerning point. O-line, D-line, the trenches were really what Chet and Furman dominated, both sides of the ball. Mm-hmm. And, again, I'm not throwing stones at one line. I just think when you look at it, they're not as dominant as they have been in the past. Certainly both offensive lines
I would agree with that.
Are not what they were. Furman's D-line is certainly not what Furman is used to. Again, got time to figure it out, but to me that was eye-opening. rushing, 7 yards a carry, 54 attempts. That's a lot. Now, they did sack the quarterback 3 times, you know, and I have not on Flow Sports gone back and watched that to see. And I guess I could probably check the box score. Was it D-line? Was it linebackers? You know, what were they doing? But I am going to go back and watch. I was more interested, at least first, watching conference games, and Citadel's the team that ETSU plays. Note, there was a Mercer player injured where they had to clear the field and brought the ambulance out. I guess he collapsed in between plays. And last report we got texting some people at Mercer was that he is okay.
He's in stable condition. Yeah.
Yeah, they're not sure, last I talked to him yesterday, of why he collapsed, but they did say that he is okay. So it was. I remember Robert kind of elbowing me. Robert Harper was in a booth with me at Elon and saying, hey, something crazy is going on here because there's nobody on the field and there's an ambulance and they're not even pointing the camera that way. So that's usually not a good sign. But the good news is that young man, but they had a little bit of a delay there. But I watched that and, you know, Mercer jumped out 14-0 and Citadel kind of punched him back. And so I think it's going to be an interesting league where before you could kind of, if you were the upper teams, you kind of slept on a few teams. And now, again, VMI's got to figure it out. But other than that, it's going to be tough because let's face it, even if Furman is still 0-for here in a week or Chat doesn't beat Portland State or ETSU, at some point they're going to figure it out. Like, yeah. I refuse to believe that those two coaches, Clay Hendricks and Rusty Wright, aren't going to have it figured out.
Khalil Moody was the player, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, Khalil Moody was the one that collapsed. Mercer issued a statement shortly after the game. He's in stable condition at Atrium Health, Navicent Medical Center in downtown Macon. And we'll defer to the institution for more updates, but glad to hear that he is stable after a scary incident in that game. That kind of threw everybody for a loop.
So we will go over the schedule more on Thursday when we break it down, but, you got some conference games. Obviously, ETSU's at Citadel. Mercer's going to Wofford, and I think we'll know more about each team at the end of this. If Mercer goes to 5-0, what does that say? Or if Wofford able to beat him at home, be curious to see how that game plays out to fully give you an opinion, but I'm looking forward to kind of talking about that on Thursday.
What's better for the conference? I'm curious. I'll let you think on that one. Ponder on that for a couple days.
Okay.
What's better for the conference if Wofford wins that game and kind of upsets the apple cart of Mercer is the preeminent team, which a lot of people kind of have built into their heads because they're 4-0? Or is it better if Mercer asserts its dominance and the SoCon gets a top-10 team out of it? I will wait for
that. That is a great question.
Yeah. Because I think arguments can be made both ways. Honestly, we may have to Rochambeau for which one of us makes which. We may just both have to take one. It's going to make me play devil's advocate.
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
We may want to walk in. We'll see which way we're leaning to start with, and hopefully one's leaning one way, one's leaning the other. We don't have to do it that way.
I do feel better, I will say, after having...
You look better, by the way.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I look less ready to... I look less ready to pick up a keyboard and swing it. Oh, man. But that's it for us today on the Jay and Keith Show, presented by First Horizon. ETSU Volleyball coming up Thursday and Friday, and soccer on Saturday, all at home. And, of course, football. SoCon play begins with the Citadel.
Oh, you gotta be kidding me!